702
on 92.7
and 106 FM.
Streaming on 702.co.za, the 702 app, and on DSTV channel 856.
7 minutes after 12, Dumelang. Good afternoon. You are with 702 and Cape Talk for the Curious. I'm Clement Manyatela. Great to be with you until 1 p.m. this afternoon, bringing you the latest news you need to know about. Remember, you're welcome to join the conversation on 011-883-0702. In Cape Town, you can call us on 021-446-0567. You can also SMS us on 31702 and 31567. Our WhatsApp line for those short voice messages, 072-702-1702. Coming up, Gauteng Education MEC Panyaza Lesufi says there appears there was serious negligence on the part of the Parktown Boys High School and the Nyati Lodge. He's actually briefing the media right now, releasing a report into the death of Enoch Mpianzi. The principal of the school has been suspended. The trip was apparently not even authorized. It wasn't approved. Let's go live to that briefing in Johannesburg.
Current camps or arrangements that have been made by the schools, that we need to revisit all of them immediately to be sure that all the relevant approvals have been made. I also want to conclude that the same school, Parktown Boys, arranged for a trip to Bloemfontein in the month of January. In the interest of safety, also in the interest of honoring Enoch, we jointly took a decision to cancel this trip to Bloemfontein. We'll explain this when we meet with parents later this evening. I want to leave it there, Steve.
So that is the MEC of Education in Gauteng, Panyaza Lesufi, briefing the media around the preliminary investigations and that report into the passing on and the death of Enoch Mpianzi. Critical things coming out of that briefing. The principal of Parktown Boys High has been suspended. We are learning from the MEC that the trip was not even authorized. They had actually applied for the trip to be approved, but by the time they had gone, it wasn't authorized. And the MEC has also taken a decision to cancel a trip that was coming up, that was a trip to Bloemfontein, and now that has been cancelled. Our EWN reporter, Khumutso Modise, is attending that press briefing. We'll go live to her to speak to us about what else the MEC has had to say. I see now that he's taking questions from journalists. It's now 9 minutes after 12.
Connect.
Engage.
Change.
This is 702.
This is 702.
For the curious.
So before we start with our leading story, I just want us to clarify something. You know, politicians sometimes think we are fools. Yesterday, I interviewed the MEC of local government in Gauteng, Lebogang Maile, and I asked him how far he is with placing Tshwane under administration. And he said they've never placed the metro under administration and that his department never even considered it. The issue of Tshwane being placed under administration, how far are you with that process?
We have never said we're putting Tshwane under administration.
That was, are you not considering it?
No. Well, we don't want to run any municipality. The issue of administration is what was raised by the opposition and the media when we said we are intervening.
Well, the MEC spoke to me on this very show last month, on the 6th of December, and confirmed the metro was being placed under administration and that that process had started. Here is our conversation from last month. MEC, thank you so much for chatting to us and good afternoon to you. Why have you decided to place the capital under administration?
Well, for a number of reasons, because it has not been performing properly over the last few years, and that this includes issues of financial management, corruption, tender irregularities, lack of service delivery. There were no ward committees. There's findings and recommendations of the Auditor General that they've not been adhered to. And many of the wrong appointments in the senior management.
So he didn't tell the truth yesterday, and I didn't want to have a back and forth with him about whether or not he was lying yesterday when he said his department never said it would take place under, it would place Tshwane under administration. I mean, we have interviews on this show and we have to do those interviews in an hour. So doing a back and forth would compromise the rest of the content. So I just wanted to quickly play you these contradictory statements by their same MEC so that you can make up your mind?
Connect.
Engage.
Change.
This is 702.
This is 702.
For the curious.
Another interview we did yesterday was with an ANC councillor in Diepsloot, Abraham Mabuke. Remember that? He told us he supports calls by community members for foreign nationals that are undocumented to leave the area. He said that's because they are responsible for crime. I asked him where he gets that evidence that foreign nationals are involved in crime in the area. And he told me that the Diepsloot station commander told the community 90% of the crime committed in Diepsloot was by foreign nationals. And I know many of you send us SMSs, WhatsApp messages and said, but is that even true? Well, we tracked down the station commander and it turns out the councillor wasn't telling the truth. The station commander says he never said that. So we need to be very careful of the so-called community leaders and what they dish out to community members, especially when that information has the potential to cause tensions among communities. It's now 12 minutes after 12.
702.
WhatsApp us now on 072-702-1702.
Mineral Resources Minister Gwede Mantashe has released the mine health and safety statistics for the 2019 calendar year. This really looks at the performance of mining industry in terms of fatalities, injuries and occupational disease. And the minister says 51 fatalities were recorded last year. My understanding is that the year before, the number was standing at about 81. Let's now speak to David Mseza, the chief inspector of mines at the Department of Mineral Resources and Energy. David, good afternoon. Thank you so much for speaking to us.
Good afternoon, and thank you for the opportunity, and good afternoon to the listeners.
So a drop from 2018 in terms of these fatalities, but some may argue still a significant number of people dying during the course of duty.
Yes. I think it's important for us to say that we continue to express our sincere condolences to the families of the workers who lost their lives in the sector. And hence we've been engaging with organized labor and business to ensure that ultimately we achieve a goal of zero harm. What we've done today as well, we took a historical approach look. In other words, we've looked at the fatalities from Minister spoke about the Coalbrook accident, for instance, that happened in the 60s, where 435 people lost their lives. We've also looked at the fatalities in 1993, where 615 people lost their lives. So we clearly see that there's been a significant reduction. However, we are saying there's still more that can be done for us to ultimately achieve the goal of zero harm.
What's the breakdown of medical deaths due to occupational diseases? Because we know about the noise-induced hearing loss, the silicosis, there's TB. What are you able to share with us in terms of the medical conditions, the diseases that will then end up in many of these miners suffering and even losing their lives?
The breakdown of occupational diseases, you'll see that from the stats that we've shown today, is that most of the occupational diseases reported by the mining sector through the compliance of the law are mainly what we call pulmonary TB. Pulmonary TB is different from normal TB. It's caused by exposure to dust or silica dust. It's caused by, noise-induced hearing loss. Noise-induced hearing loss is exposure over time to noise, that is overexposure. Silicosis. Silicosis is caused by overexposure to silica or what we call quartz. Now, the difference between occupational diseases and accidents is that they take time to come through. You know, an accident is a fall of ground now, someone gets injured.
Yeah.
But for instance, with silicosis, it can take you between 6 to 12 years, depending on the person and the level of exposure. So I think those are the main diseases that are being reported by the sector. Mm. However, the trends that we've shown today over the last 11 years, we've seen that there's been a significant reduction, including with silicosis, pulmonary TB, and noise-induced.
And David, unions feel that as government you're failing to act, that there are no consequences for mining companies where these deaths occur, and sometimes under negligent circumstances. I mean, there have been calls for the Mine Health and Safety Act to be amended so that companies can be prosecuted. Has that taken off? Because I even remember the Portfolio Committee on Mineral Resources calling on the department to urgently draft legislation that will hold mine bosses and managers accountable for any life that is lost on duty.
Yes, there's been talks at the Portfolio Committee. It's one of the things that we'll be looking at, the Mine Health and Safety Bill. But we just have to assure the public that the department has not just been not doing anything or being reactive. In fact, if you can recall, the number of fatalities in what we call the disaster type of accident. The disaster is one accident resulting in five or more people losing their lives in one accident. Has been increasing since 2017 to 2008. We've also been intervening. We've intervened to understand what was the problem at that time. We've engaged with the company boards. We've engaged with the CEO to ensure that they review the strategy. And as a result, there's been an improvement in terms of a significant improvement thereof in 2019. But we are, at the end of the day, regulators. You would have probably noted as well in the media space that some of the companies will complain about Section 54. We normally will say that we are not there to issue Section 54 or abuse a Section 54. Section 54 is an instruction that you can issue in terms of the Act to ensure compliance to prevent harm on the work. So we have been issuing also those instructions, and we believe those initiatives, including of monitoring and enforcing the law, and also continuously engaging with the workers themselves and the employers, because their responsibilities lies with the employers as well to ensure compliance to put systems, has resulted over the last 26 years in a significant reduction in fatalities, injuries, yeah. and disease. In fact, last year, the number of last year were the lowest ever recorded on record that we have, including the fact that the number of disasters have reduced significantly since 2016 to about zero last year.
All right. David Mseza, thank you so much for speaking to us. He's a chief inspector of mines at the Department of Mineral Resources and Energy. What do you make of that? I mean, 51, sure, it's a drop, but that's still a significant number. People should not be dying, especially if it's as a result of negligence of these mining companies. And I actually remember President Cyril Ramaphosa speaking at I think one of the NUM conferences, and calling on miners to refuse to work under unsafe conditions. But does legislation even protect them? I know AMCU wants that Section 23, as I told David earlier, of the Mine Health and Safety Act to be strengthened so workers can refuse to work without fear of suspension. And that's where we need to start. Let's push that legislation, because otherwise we're not going to go anywhere beyond just holding these safety seminars. Let's get some reaction now from Sipho Mungwe, who's the NUM Health and Safety Secretary. Sipho, good afternoon. Thank you so much for speaking to us. As NUM, how do you react to these figures that have been released by the Minerals Resources Department? Do you get a sense that the department is doing enough to ensure that there's an improvement of health and safety in mines?
Actually, it's a collaboration, because we work as a tripartite in the Mine Health and Safety Act. It's not only the department's work. We welcome the improvement in terms of the figures, but it's not that we are celebrating, because dying, we cannot celebrate dying of people. So there's nothing to celebrate, but we welcome the decrease in terms of the numbers, because it shows us some improvement in terms of the measurements that we are taking to make the lives of our members safe. But there's nothing that we can say we are celebrating.
All right. Look, thank you so much for that reaction. Sipho Mungwe, NUM Health and Safety Secretary. It's 20 minutes after 12.
702 for the curious.
Streaming countrywide on the 702 app.
24 minutes after 12, the Gauteng Education MEC, Panyaza Lesufi, is still briefing the media in Johannesburg on the preliminary report that they've released into the death of Enoch Mpianzi. What we know so far is that the school headmaster has been suspended. We're also told that the trip to that Nyati Lodge was not even authorized. And also, the trip to Bloemfontein that was upcoming has now been cancelled. EWN reporter Khomotso Modise will give us the details of that briefing just after the 12:30 news. Let's look at this now. Journalist Anton Haber and journalist Thandeka Qubule have won their defamation case against the EFF. They took the party to court over offensive comments it made suggesting the two were apartheid-era Stratcom spies. Do you remember how it all happened? There was that documentary that was screened on the life of the late struggle stalwart Winnie Madikizela-Mandela, in which she said Qubule was negatively disposed towards her, and that the Weekly Mail, which Harbour founded and edited in the 1980s, was, quote, anti-me and anti-ANC. She then said the Weekly Mail actually did the job for Stratcom. Right after that, the EFF issued a statement calling on Qubule and Harbour specifically to confess and ask for forgiveness. Let's speak to Anton Haber now, who's the Caxton Professor for Journalism at the University of Witwatersrand. Anton, good afternoon to you. Thank you so much for speaking to us. Your reaction to the judgment?
Oh, I'm very pleased. It defends our name. It defends journalism from attacks of this sort. And I think it's a victory for truth and for the attempts to stop public figures making unsubstantiated and defamatory and pretty wild statements.
Mm. So they've been asked to apologize. Have they also been asked to make payments to you and Qubule?
Yes, they've been asked to take it down from their website, to publish an apology on all the platforms in which they published what they said, such as all the social media, to pay us damages, and to desist from saying it further, and to do all of that within the next 24 hours.
And you're not
the payment, but the apology.
The apology, and that payment is what, about 40,000 rand?
Each, yes.
For each of you.
But, you know, the amount is not important.
Yeah.
The importance was in stopping such outrageous statements being made, because they're damaging and dangerous.
And I know this is probably early, but any indication yet on whether they will be abiding by that court ruling or they will be appealing it? Do you know yet?
I have no idea. Mm. I have no idea, but they will be in contempt if they don't.
Mm.
So I expect them to do so.
All right. Anton Haber, thank you so much for giving us your reaction to that court judgment. They've won the defamation case against the EFF. 27 minutes after 12.
702.
WhatsApp us now on 072-702-1702.
Good afternoon. My name is Tumisani Mkize, all the way from Soweto, Prochatlen. I think that is a good thing that what our MEC has done to dismiss the headmaster of Parktown Boys High School. You know, when it comes to the issues of dereliction of duty, we need to see such. And I'm really, 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 really moved by what he has done by suspending, you know, the headmaster. So that's a good thing. It's commendable. Thanks.
Yeah, look, a lot of people are celebrating that. The MEC is still speaking there, releasing that report, the preliminary report. I told you earlier that we'll get a quick update from EWN reporter Khomotso Modise, who is attending that press briefing. Khomotso, good afternoon. Thank you so much for joining us. What are some of the key things that have come out of this briefing by the MEC?
Well, Clement, the big detail, of course, the one that we've been anticipating after the calls this week, is the suspension of the principal, the headmaster at Parktown Boys High. Now, we've heard calls from a number of civil rights organizations and groups just with regards to the way that, you know, this camp was handled, saying that he is the ultimate, you know, master in charge, and he has a responsibility to ensure that the boys ultimately are all safe. And so that announcement came today. We also heard that officials from the education department at a district level that were handling processing this application by the school to have the camp have also been suspended. We heard from the MEC that the camp, well, according to the gazetted policy, it's up to the schools to notify the district 3 months before, at least 3 months before, of their camp. And it should then be approved by the district before the camp actually happens. Now, it came out on this briefing today that that camp, that resort in the Northwest, had not been approved by the district. And that's actually big, Clement, because that means the school took the boys to the camp without the okay or the thumbs up from the district. And we also heard today that the 3 months that they were supposed to abide by, or ensuring that they informed the district within 3 months, they had not met that requirement. They only informed the district at the the middle of November, and the camp took place at the beginning of January.
All right, listen, I know you have to go back into that briefing. Thank you so much for that quick update. AWN reporter Khomotso Modise, are you satisfied with the decisions that the MEC has taken? Are they enough to hold those responsible to account and to just send a strong message? I mean, how do you take learners on a trip that hasn't been authorized by the district? How do you do that? So that's very problematic. And the MEC now says the rules are going to change. There's going to be very strict rules in how the schools go about approving or even go about arranging these camps and these trips that pupils have to go to. About time, and that's possibly going to help us avoid many of the things that we've seen that have been lurking and the things that have led to even the deaths of peoples that go on these trips. I'll take your calls on 011-883-0702 in Cape Town, 021-446-0567.
702 for the curious.
Streaming countrywide on the 702 app.
It's going up to 20 minutes before 1 o'clock. Look, I wasn't going to talk about this, but many of you are texting me on 31702 and 31567. You're also sending me WhatsApp messages, and you are telling me also, I just saw a tweet also, which says, Clement, has Patrice Motsepe been appointed Africa's spokesperson? Well, if you don't know what this is all about, take a listen to this.
We'll start with you.
Thank you. We do business in 50 countries. I had the honor of being one of the 100 greatest business minds, Forbes.
That's right.
And it was a great honor to be with you. And all we wanted to say is that Africa loves America. Africa loves you.
Thank you very much.
And it's very, very important. We want America to do well. We want you to do well. And the success of America is the success of the rest of the world.
Thank you.
We are in mining, financial services, property, real estate, technology, very diversified. It's a great honor to be here.
Done a great job. Thank you very much.
Thanks, President.
Please.
Patrice Motsepe was speaking at this dinner that was organized by Donald Trump with business people. He says, Africa loves you. He says, we want you to do well. And a lot of you are very offended by that because you say, how dare he? Look, we've tried to put in a request to speak to Patrice Motsepe. We've been struggling to get a hold of him, to speak to him about what he meant. And I suppose where he got the authority to represent, you know, the view of Africa as a whole. But I got an SMS here from Johnny in Garankuwa, who says, good day, Clement. Tito Mboweni is answering a question from the SABC journalist in Davos. And this is what he's had to say on this issue of Patrice Motsepe. Obviously, he was asked by this SABC journalist what he makes of what Patrice Motsepe said. And he says, Patrice Motsepe is entitled to express his opinion. He was speaking at a private meeting, so leave him alone. 9 minutes before 1.
702.
WhatsApp us now on 072-702-1702.
Hi, guys. What was Patrice Motsepe supposed to say? Was he supposed to say, Donald Trump, we hate you, Africa hate you? Those guys in the U.S., they are doing a lot of things. Look at the U.S. aid. They are spending billions in Africa.
Yeah, but did Africa ever say they love Donald Trump? That's the question. Did Africa say they love Donald Trump? Because that's what he told Donald Trump. I've also asked you if you're satisfied with the decision that Banyaza Lesufi has taken, suspending this headmaster. Here's what some of you have to say.
Hi, Clement. I am not satisfied with everything that Lesufi has just told us. I was expecting for those teachers who were busy playing mrabaraba there while kids are drowning down there in that crocodile river. And what about the lodge? What about that horror lodge? Is there anything that is going to happen to them? just asking. Thank you.
So my understanding is that the MEC is within his jurisdiction is to deal with issues of the school, right? And when it comes to the lodge and whether or not they were authorized, was there some level of criminality on their part, then it's the criminal investigation that would have to take place. It's now 15 minutes before 1 o'clock. We got a voice note earlier, just as we started the show, from someone who's concerned about what's happening at UNISA. So we've invited Dr. Lusani Nenchitomboni, who is the acting director of communications at UNISA, to speak to us about what's happening there. But first, let's bring you some context and play you this voice note we got earlier.
Good afternoon, Clement. Good afternoon to the team as well. Yesterday, Clement, I went to UNISA in Florida, and we were going there for registration because their website is giving a bit of a problem. We got there, we were turned away by the staff, chased out of the building, and told that Nehau, I think, their members haven't been paid, so they've shut the campus down, they've shut everything down, they are on strike. The closing of the registration is today, Clement. Can you please help us find out what the problem is?
So, Dr. Nenchitomboni, thank you so much for speaking to us. I really appreciate you coming through at such short notice. The registration apparently is closing today. Nehau employees have shut down the campus. What can you share with us about what's happening at UNISA today?
Let me just start by apologizing on behalf of the university to all the students who have been inconvenienced by the strike that is going on throughout our campuses starting today. But also let me say that the registration date was supposed to be today.
Yeah.
But that has since been moved to the 1st of February. Because among other things, we realized that there's no way that you can jeopardize the opportunities that students would want to take to study at UNISA. So the registration date is really not closing to date anymore. We have sent the communication to all our current students and prospective students. And if they have not yet received it, they'll probably be receiving that communication during the day to the effect that the closing date is no longer going to be today.
Mm.
We have also placed these changes on the UNISA website and on the social media platform so that all the students that are wanting to register have access to this communication.
Mm.
But also what we're encouraging our students to do is that if you cannot access the campuses or any other office where you can register, we're encouraging them to register online because the online system is at the moment functional and we will still enable you
okay.
to register as if you are having someone face-to-face.
So what's going to happen then to the protest that is currently underway from this listener by Nehau? Because that seems to be the reason why you've even had to shift the closing date for registration to the 1st of February, because some of the students can't access the campus to come register.
The strike is actually going on. It started this morning, but at the same time, the negotiations and discussions are ongoing with labor. And we are hoping that as we engage with each other, a resolution will be found hopefully soon enough. There have been some significant or sufficient progress that has been made. At this stage, if you look at it, management is offering 6% salary increase and labor is demanding a 7% increase, which indicates that there is some movement which is fairly encouraging. But we're hoping that as we continue to engage, a resolution will be found soon.
All right. Let me also ask you that maybe you need to maybe tell the call center to answer their calls. Someone is SMS'd us saying, UNISA, that's a problem. Whether there's a strike or not, calls are mm-hmm. not being answered. So that's one of the concerns that are being raised on the SMS line. But thank you so much for speaking to us. Dr. Lusani Nenchitomboni is the Acting Director of Communications at UNISA.
702 for the curious on 92.7 and 106 FM.
11 minutes, in fact 10 minutes exactly before 1 o'clock, and the ANC in Tshwane was holding a media briefing this morning. This follows a decision yesterday by the Gauteng Local Government Minister Lebogang Maile, Gauteng Local Government MEC Lebogang Maile, to suspend DA councillors Vasco Dagama, who is a councillor in Johannesburg, and Katlego Matebe, who is a speaker of the Tshwane Council. The MEC says they are constitutional delinquents and they acted contrary to their responsibilities when they collapsed council meetings, and they've been suspended without pay. And many have been asking, is this politics or is the Gauteng government having genuine reasons for taking these drastic steps? Well, let's speak to the ANC in Tshwane. Dr. Khosi Maepa is the chairperson of the ANC in that region. Dr. Maepa, good afternoon. Thanks for your time. So the Tshwane Council doesn't have a speaker now. What's going to happen?
Thank you, Clement, and to the listeners of your radio station and your show. Thank you for having us. The African National Congress has written letters from the 3rd of January to the speaker to organize a meeting for multi-party so that we can plan the councils, because there were petitions, as you will know, that have been forwarded to the speaker to call a council meeting where we want to vote on motions of no confidence. The speaker has avoided from the 3rd of January to the 16th when we finally had that meeting, where she flatly refused to call council meetings that will plan, in other words, programming meetings that will plan for how council agenda will be programmed. But we also copied the Minister of COGTA and the NEC in all those letters and all our communication with the speaker, asking her persistently that according to Section 29.1 of the Municipal Structures Act, the request that is given is the request that you must respond to, because it's no longer the speaker's meeting. It's now the meeting of petitioners, which is majority of councillors, but she was refusing. But beyond that, the NEC sent people at City of Tshwane when we had a meeting on the 16th of January to oversee the meeting. The speaker did not want to hear any of those people. Actually, she dismissed them out of the meeting. Beyond that, the speaker did not want to take the agenda as we specified as petitioners. Beyond that the NEC again went to the speaker and said, can I meet with you? Can we really resolve this issue? Twice, he sent a letter to the speaker. The speaker did not want to hear any of that and never even responded. Yeah. So beyond that, really, I think the NEC acted within his rights, within his constitutional provisions, because the speaker was undermining those provisions.
What's going to happen now?
And then the results suspended there.
What's going to happen now, Dr.
We are continuing with our meeting next week, Tuesday, on the 20th, on the 28th of January. We have asked the city manager to take out notice. We send a letter today to the city manager to say that he must continue. Remember, in the absence of the speaker, the city manager takes over the council.
Yeah.
Okay, she's suspended now. I mean, council must continue. We're not going to wait for the DA. If the DA wants to put another person there, it's open in council that they can forward another person while they are, that one is suspended, to be voted in. I mean, we're a democratic state. They will be voting in the council.
Okay.
If the president of the DA gets the position, then it's fine.
And if anyone that you guys put forward, are you going to be placing motions of no confidence against the mayor and the speaker again in the council?
Remember, this is a continuation meeting, so it's not a new meeting. It's a simple continuation meeting of a meeting that the speaker collapsed, and that's why she was suspended. So in that, we will continue with all those four motions, and we'll vote on them, and that's it.
All right. Last question, Dr. Maepa. There's been a bit of confusion. I want to ask you, as the ANC in Tshwane, what do you understand about the process of placing Tshwane under administration so far? Where are we?
No, they remember, it's the initial stages where the NEC spoke about Section 139.1A. That's where he is giving instructions in terms of intervention. That he, at the moment, his main preoccupation was the intervention on water in Hammond's Graft.
Mm.
So that is not administration. It's really for the NEC to intervene in a municipality where he feels that there's no delivery of a particular service, and in this regard it was water, and he intervened that there must be a water solution for people of Hammond's Graft.
Okay.
And that is not to put the city under administration.
All right. ANC Tshwane Chair, Dr. Khosi Maepa, thank you so much for speaking to us.
702. SMS us now.
131-702.
It's just so interesting that, politicians. So last year, and I played you those clips earlier, yesterday I interviewed the MEC of local government, Lebogang Maile, who said, when I asked how far is the process of placing Tshwane under administration, and he said, we've never said we're placing Tshwane under administration. And I said, were you not considering it? He said, we've never even considered it. I played you a clip of our interview with him last year on the 6th of December. And I asked him, why did you place Tshwane under administration? Because he said the decision had been taken, and he explained his reasons for the Gauteng government to intervene and place the metro under administration. I remember at the time, so one, those are contradictory statements, so he wasn't telling us the truth yesterday. But even Khosi Maepa, I remember when this decision was made in December last year, the ANC in Tshwane came and reacted to it, welcoming the decision by Lebogang Maile to place the metro under administration. So whatever happened, the DA said they were going to take legal action and challenge that decision. So it seems they've probably noticed that they didn't follow the proper processes, and now they want to come back and act as if this was never said by them. Yeah, ne? Politicians, 5 minutes after, before one.
702 for the curious.
Streaming countrywide on the 702 app.
Mthako Nangatani, EWN reporter, you are not a politician. You are tracking down on what's happening at the State Capture Commission. Zola Tsotsi, the former Eskom board chair, is on the stand. A lot of focus has been on the agreement that Eskom signed with the Gupta-owned TNA on those TNA breakfast meeting. What is he telling us about that? What role did he play to authorize or to fight back on that 43 million rand contract?
For the record, I'm not a politician, Clement.
Yes.
Yes, indeed. The commission ended its testimony with former chair or former board chair, Zola Tsotsi, earlier this morning. And the issue was whether the board had acted correctly in not suspending a contract that had been signed earlier with the Gupta-owned TNA breakfast, and that the former public protector, Tulima Donsela, had said should be suspended while she investigates, because there were allegations that the sponsorship deal had been awarded irregularly. Now, earlier, Tsotsi had said, only yesterday, really, he claimed ignorance of this whole matter. However, today he then admits to Commission Chair, Deputy Chief Justice Raymond Zondo, when he says to him, we're talking about 43 million. Yeah. Couldn't you as the board have ensured that, first of all, management had done its work in ensuring that it is a profitable agreement for the company before you decided to go ahead with it or to continue with it? And eventually he admits, yes, indeed, they could have done differently. But obviously, this is different from what he said yesterday.
All right. EWN reporter, Thako Nangatani, really appreciate your time.